You're tuned to Focus on Campus, a weekly show which highlights faculty, staff, and students here at the University of Texas at El Paso. I'm Luis Sainz, your host for Focus on Campus, and joining us today is Dr. Roberto Avant-Mir. Dr. Mir is a professor here at the University of Texas at El Paso in our department, and his speciality is media, popular culture, and Robbie, and I'm going to call him Robbie from now on because I've known him as Robbie forever. The fact that Robbie has been doing a lot of studies on popular music, on rock and español. He teaches classes on music and film. But recently, he's been working on a paper about tamales in the Southwest. Robbie, thank you very much for being with us here today.
Hey, Louis. Thank you for having me.
Right now, it's probably 100 and some out right there outside, and we're talking about tamales. if we were in the kitchen right now, we'd be steamed when we lift off that lid.
But, and sweaty.
Tell us about your study. What got you interested in writing about tamales in the summer?
Growing up here in El Paso like I did, right? I grew up here in El Paso and in the Southwest. We eat tamales pretty much year-round, right? But mostly I thought of tamales as like a special Christmas
food. Holidays?
Right. It was a holiday food. To answer your question of how I got into tamales, I never intended to write about tamales. This was never a plan. as a communication scholar, media, as you said, music and film is what I've been researching. I never planned and never imagined that I would write about tamales. So ironically enough, I'm writing about tamales now. I started writing about tamales really unintentionally, and it's an offshoot of some of my previous research, right? That's the really short answer. If you remember, I think last time I spoke with you for this show, I think you interviewed me about my book, Rock the Nation,
right,
which was published in 2010. And in one chapter of Rock the Nation, in a very brief section of the first chapter, I wrote about this guy named Robert Johnson, the famous blues guitarist, Robert Johnson. Robert Johnson is a legendary guy who sold his soul to the devil at the crossroads. Do you remember that legend if you've heard it? He's a great blues man, considered one of the greatest blues guitarists ever lived, right? He's a legend in blues and, of course, rock and roll history. Robert Johnson, I had discovered, and I wrote about this in the book, is that he had a song called the song is called They're Red Hot. But it's a reference to African Americans in Mississippi that eat tamales, and they call them red hots, or they call them hot tamales, or sometimes they more commonly call them tamales. But it's always something like hot tamales or red hots, even something like that. The long story short being that I discovered that there is a tradition of tamales among African Americans in the Mississippi Delta region, in really Mississippi and all the way on down south into Louisiana. That's how I got into this, right? We just spoke about how I'm a music scholar, really. I'm a media scholar, doing a little bit of research on popular music, doing a little bit of research in film, and, you know, teaching these types of classes. And it was through popular music research, right, finding the songs of Robert Johnson, this one song specifically, and asking the question, why is Robert Johnson, who's a legendary blues guy from like the 1920s and 30s, why was he singing about hot tamales, right? Why is a black man from Mississippi singing about tamales, right? Because growing up in El Paso as a Mexican-American kid, I'm thinking we're tamales, right? Mexicans eat tamales. Why is an African-American man from Mississippi singing about hot tamales? That was the question that I started this research with, to be honest with you. It was a very simple question.
About the red hot tamales? We may be familiar, some of us, with the candy. Red hot tamales. Is that any significance to the song or the tamales from Mississippi?
That's a really, really good question. I thought about that. I thought about that as recently as about a month ago because since I've been writing this paper, which is a whole different paper, and now it's a manuscript that I'm turning into an article. This article has become its own thing. And now instead of one song about tamales, I found 20 songs about tamales. And I discovered that there's a thing in Mississippi called the Tamale Trail where you can, you know, find these places where people sell tamales. And it goes all the way up to Chicago. This whole thing has just been turning itself into a paper. You know, sometimes this is the way research goes. Research drives itself, and you're just following as the researcher. You're just following where the research has taken you. To answer your question, I don't know, and I haven't figured out yet where hot tamales, the candy, comes from.
Now, I'm wondering, these tamale songs, were they sung mostly in the 20s, or did they continue on through the Civil War, and are they still contemporary?
Great question. To answer the last one, they are still contemporary. I'm finding the more I search for songs about hot tamales, the more I discover. This is one of the things I was just trying to say, is I keep finding more and more evidence of these weird coincidences of hot tamales coming up as songs by African Americans, by white country, white hillbilly musicians in the 50s, by people like Carlos Santana. And of course, we might say Carlos Santana, of course, he's singing about hot tamales. He's a Mexican. But what I discovered is there's a tradition of hot tamales, songs about hot tamales going back to as early as the 1890s. This was the fascinating part, right? Here's the trick, though. In the 1890s is when I discovered, going back and finding more songs and more songs and more references to songs about hot tamales. The difficulty is usually the music of blacks, poor blacks especially, well, any African Americans at all in the South, it was very rarely recorded until, you know, I think pretty much the 1920s and 30s when we first started getting the first recordings by African Americans. And the question becomes, okay, so what's popping up in 1890? What I'm finding in 1890, 1898, 1896, 1909, I'm finding songs by white artists. And they're white artists who are – their routine, their repertoire is covering the songs of African American folk songs. So it's white people copying the songs of poor blacks in the South. That's what's coming up first. So you get the songs by white people, of course, but they're borrowing African American folk songs. What I figured out and what I'm discovering about these African American songs that later are going to get recorded by African American themselves eventually, in the 1890s and early 1900s, these songs are being recorded, but you know, they came from somewhere. They came from a tradition of African Americans. What I discovered is that African American men, mostly men, they sold them out of push carts. They sold tamales out of push carts. And some of the earliest songs, which maybe weren't even songs, I understand them as like a sing-song kind of cadence, like come get your hot tamales, hot tamales. Hot tamale man was a famous phrase. So there was these men that were called hot tamale salesmen. They were called molly men. And that's because they would sing these songs. They would sing these songs, come get your hot tamales. And I imagine, as I'm discovering in his research, that those were some of the earliest sort of forms of singing about hot tamales, even though they weren't officially songs. And, of course, understand that in this time, in the 1890s, they're not being recorded yet. The earliest recordings we have is going to be eventually by white artists covering black music.
That's interesting because I know Chubby Checker had one about peanuts. Peanuts, come and get your peanuts.
Perfect example,
you know,
of that, right?
Example.
Perfect example.
And I was wondering, you know, it may not even mean anything, but I'm thinking, well, you know, what about further down the road if you come across the fact that you know, burritos have been around for a long time, and perhaps even African Americans made those because they call them raps now, you know, and rap music and stuff like that. But who knows, you know, what music comes out, and you know as well as I do that when we've gone to Juarez in the past, you hear these guys or even downtown pushing the carts and singing songs, anything to attract, you know, the people to come by if it's a hot summer day like we have in El Paso almost every day, the fact that, you know, they're selling ice cold ice cream. And
ice cold beer, get your hot dogs, right? Go to a baseball game, they're singing, get your beer, get your hot dogs. That's what I imagine. And, of course, you know, I'm looking at this, you know, 100 years later. But I know that songs existed among African Americans about hot tamales, which are going to get copied by the white interpreter, the Anglo-American interpreter, who are the first recordings. And then eventually, about the 1920s and 30s, you're going to have African Americans recording their own blues songs. And that continues. So by the 1930s, you have songs by African Americans about hot tamales. You have country versions in the 1950s. It starts to become a sort of a legacy in American popular music where you have blues musicians singing about hot tamales. You have country musicians. You have rock and roll songs about hot tamales. And this is the kind of history that I'm uncovering here.
Wow, that sounds like you could almost come up with your own songs now.
Yeah.
Hot tamales going to town. Anyway, I was going to ask you about the tamales because I did a tamal story maybe about 10 years ago. And it was like Latino USA said there's some kind of food conference going on in El Paso. We want you to do a tamal story and interview some people. And I ran into a lady, lo and behold, from Mexico City who was a tamal expert. And I didn't even know there was somebody with a degree as a tamal expert.
Right.
But she claimed, and I'm not sure if you've run across this in your research or not, she claimed that it was the Indians here who had the tamales, but they would put insects in them. And it was not until the Spaniards came over that they started introducing beef and pork into the tamale. Mm. Now, as far as your writing, do you know what was put into the African-American tamale?
Yeah, actually I do. This is the beautiful part of this research, right? As I said, I've never imagined I would be writing or reading about tamales, but I am. So I know more now than I ever imagined. But I found a couple scholars that talk about the ingredients. One scholar says that there are anthropologists have discovered like 41 different varieties, what they would call distinct varieties. Like, so for example, here in the southwest of the United States, we see them in corn husks. And very common tamales here are like red pork and chili, right? Red pork and chile. The other version that's common here is green chili and cheese. That's another common one that we have here. In Mexico, in other parts of Mexico, you have different varieties. In Central America, in Cuba, Puerto Rico, South America, they have different versions, right? So the big thing being, for example, in the South, I know they wrap them with banana leaves rather than corn husks. And it's also different ingredients. What I've read about the days pre-colonial times, right, pre-Columbian times, is that they had all kinds of ingredients. They had, shrimp, fish. They had tamales with cactus. They had tamales with vegetables. Some of them had sauces, right? The Indians had their moles, their different sauces, right? So green sauces, red sauces, brown sauces. So it was very common. And I think what you said is exactly right. Probably pork and beef doesn't appear in tamales that commonly until the Spanish conquest. But at least before then, they did have some versions of meat. I've read that they had some people, different tribes, different areas in Mexico, different Indian tribes. They had either fish or shrimp. I even read that one scholar says that in the poorest sectors of the Aztec society, the Aztec Empire, the poorest sort of social class of the Aztec society was forced to eat them with dog meat because that was, I guess, the best meat that they had available. But everything from, of course, beef and chicken and pork to vegetables to cactus to shrimp to, you know, various chiles to even, you know, for those poor Aztecs, some people, dog meat.
When we think of burritos, you know, a lot of people think of bean burritos or chili and beef burritos. But a burrito is basically anything that you wrap in a tortilla. So you can basically have anything. I mean, I remember as a kid, we used to have peanut butter and jelly burritos, you know.
I did that.
So it's interesting how the people, when they come up, you know, when they're hungry or when they just have a certain amount of things, they put them all together. And then, you know, they may be singing while they're putting the lunch together, and then out comes a song.
Exactly. And the ingredients is whatever you have, right? But certainly the singing is part of it. And that's what I love about this research, right? Because not only, speaking to the question you just asked, not only am I discovering things about food history that I you know, didn't really think about and had never known, but this started through music history is what my thing has been, right, as a researcher. I'm studying music, I'm finding out things about culture and history, and that's leading me to a little bit of a food history as well. So this has been fascinating.
And can you find some of those songs available?
So? I do. I have some. I found some. To be honest with you, many of them are not available in recordings. So I found evidence from them. I find books where they're referencing these songs. There are a couple things that I have found on eBay where they have these rolls. Do you know those little rolls, those music rolls? They have those music rolls, references to music rolls. I did find sheet music. I'm finding sheet music where they have, you know, so the song's not available as an audio file, so I can't listen to it, but it is sheet music. I found a couple references to sheet music that exists, and it still exists in libraries. And on top of that, I did find a couple songs. So I have found songs as early as 1928, and of course the Robert Johnson song in 1936. But mostly I'm digging through, you know, archival kind of research and finding references to songs.
Well, Robbie, thank you very much for being with us here today. And next time you're digging through a tamal, a burrito, or a red hot tamal, you might want to think about Robert Johnson and Robbie Meir and African American Mississippi, Delta, Mississippi. And when you finish that paper, I hope you can come back and present it and it gets published, that you can talk more about it. And perhaps, who knows, maybe a book of different musical recipes will pop up.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great.
Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We've been visiting with Dr. Roberto Avant Meir. He is a professor here at the University of Texas at El Paso in Communication Department, and his specialty is media and popular culture. And we've been talking about the article that he's getting ready to submit to a journal, and that's on tamales. And the African Americans and Mississippi Delta. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you.
Hot tamale than the red hot, yes, she got them for sale. Hot tamale than the red hot, yes, she got them for sale. I got a good set, she long and tall, she sleeps in the kitchen with a feast in the hall. Hot tamale than the red hot, yes, she got them for sale, yeah.
Focus on Campus is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Focus on Campus. I'm Louis Science.